When you say these things out loud, they sound so obvious. Things like, oh, that person suddenly became extra sensitive, or they feel kind of touchy, or they're easily offended, or I feel like I'm walking a bit on tiptoes or on eggshells around them.
It can be so subtle. It can go from, oh, look, I'm too tired to do all of that, or I'm feeling cranky, or it's my time of the month, or things aren't going well at work, or whatever, that we mightn't realize that it's actually progressed beyond that, that it is something deeper, because then we might start getting triggered. Oh, you've never got time. You're always in a cranky mood. All of these little things are all signs and signals that are so subtle sometimes that it's so easy to miss. And it gets to the point where, we drop the butter on the floor or something, and it's the end of the world.
Angel Heart radio programs should not be used to replace your legal or medical advice, nor your own sound judgment. Welcome to Angel Heart Radio, where we inspire you to remember your magnificence. Join the conversation on our live streams. Head on over to Angel Heart Radio on Facebook. And there's even more for you on angellight777.com.
Angel Heart Radio, everyone. Man, oh man, oh man, are we being so blessed and guided today to bring you this program. Philip and I are both very passionate about this topic, and at the basis of that topic is all about support for you, isn't it, Philip?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you said it. We're very, very blessed, we feel, to be able to broach topics like this and to be able to come into people's homes and talk about such difficult things. And we just humbly come before you all and ask for you all to join in on this journey, don't we? So we can just better each other and build each other and support each other as we are supposed to live alongside each other. Yes?
Exactly right. So this is community. So we might be sitting on the other side of the camera, but at the end of the day, we gather close, we come into a community, which is what Angel Heart Radio is all about. It's about the community. So if you're watching anywhere else, this live stream anywhere else than on Angel Heart Radio's Facebook page, please head on over there. And any questions you have or anything you need to share, any support you would like us to provide with you for you today, pop all that in the comment section, because I can read it and I can pass that along to Philip. Okay, so today we are, let me just get this up, everyone. I just want to make sure I've got everything happening. Yes. So today we're speaking about how important it is to understand that there are different types of depression. And so today we're going to talk about a couple of really key points, relationship breakdown through depression, and we're also going to be talking about postnatal depression, PND, because that's also a really big factor, Philip, isn't it, on impacting relationships?
Yes, yeah. I can't speak from experience, but I have some very, very close friends who have, their marriages have actually failed because of going through things like PND, like postnatal depression. And at the time, they were just so unprepared. And it was really very, very traumatic what they had to go through with and what they had to deal with. For my part, I've been happily reaching out to anybody that I know from my circle who's been through similar things like that or has suffered from depression and has then had children, just to try and try and take from their experience and then share that to others. And naturally, for all of you listening out there, or for all of you waiting to comment, we would love to hear from your experience as well, to educate and edify us and everyone else who's listening.
Absolutely. So relationships are under a lot of strain anyway, right? Because we are learning so much about ourselves as well as the other person, how we are in relationships, what our expectations are, what's driving us. Sometimes it's all subconscious as well, Philip.
Isn't that so true? You do learn so much about yourself when you get into a long-term relationship. And it's so important to make that distinction as well, right? That long-term relationship, because you'll have this wonderful 3 to 6 months where you're default putting your best foot forward. And then slowly but surely your subconscious expectations, which have been planted in you at some point along the way, suddenly start to surface. And you're like, why am I feeling uncomfortable about this all of a sudden? Where did that come from? Like, hello, welcome to you.
Yeah, it's so, good morning, Carolan. Carolan greets us, Philip. Thank you for being with us, beautiful. It's so true, Philip, because, you know, when you're first in that relationship, we're showing our best sides, aren't we? We are actually, in some ways, living our best selves. We listen, we pay attention, we care about what the other person has to say. We smile at each other, we connect. And then slowly, as that honeymoon period begins to wear off, you know, we're absolutely certain that this relationship is it and that it's going to be completely different to all the other relationships that we've either been in or witnessed through our families and friends. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And perhaps we should take a moment here just to give people a bit of permission, because it could almost sound, it almost sounds like we're a little bit fake, like we're trying to put on this, like, oh, I'm this kind of person, don't you just love me, to attract a partner. But the bigger the gap between who you really are and who you want to be, yeah, this is where you're at. This is where a lot of your issues and your anxieties happen. So, but we all do it to some extent. Like, we're all guilty of doing this and trying to be that person. And sometimes this is a really good thing. We sometimes really should fake it till we make it, because sometimes you go, this is the person I want to be. And in 6 months' time, you realize, I actually can be this person. I can be more forgiving, more gentle, more generous, more outgoing. But of course, then we risk that, yeah, it's been 6 months into a relationship and I can't keep up this facade anymore. And suddenly my partner is going, are you still the same person that I fell in love with?
Yeah. Because that love's quite unrealistic in some ways, because we can be in love with the idea of being in love, or the idea, Philip, of what love actually is. Because often we're not prepared. We don't really know ourselves. And that's a very natural thing for us. We're learning all the time. It's why we're here, because we're learning. So I think you're right. We do need to give ourselves permission to say, you know what, it's okay to be learning, and it's okay that I don't have it all together and I don't have all the answers. I mean, so many people will relate to this. Hands up, anyone who's ever gotten up like really early to make sure that you've got, you know, your face is really nice and, you know, you've done your hair so that when your partner wakes up, they think that's how you look when you wake up. That is a completely natural thing that some people will go through. But of course, it's unrealistic, Philip. We can't maintain that, can we?
Well, I'm sure a lot of you will recall the television show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, right? Never forget this relationship where, but I'm sure there were these two people together, and one of them was completely bald and wore a toupee. This is the guy. And he had been married for the better part of 10 years, and his partner had never seen him without that toupee on. But likewise, his partner would get up. They would get up and they've gone to sleep with makeup on. So they would wake up and their pillowcase needs changing. But that's all right. Just get up, put the face on. Husband's never seen them without makeup.
Yeah. And, you know, it's such a true story. And by the way, if you have not seen that show, I love that show because it's a real heart and soul connection. We've got these guys who are all being true to who they really are, right? And they're helping other people to recognize that while it's not an easy journey, it's a great journey, and it's a journey well worth taking. So if you haven't seen it, totally recommend that you at least have a look into it. Philip, this unreal expectation that we have of relationships sometimes can really, in my own experience anyway, can really trip us up, because it's so easy to go from a point of, oh my God, they're so amazing, to, oh my God, you know, they're just not as amazing as I thought they were. And understanding that is a completely natural part of the journey. And that's a really important part, because we're learning to reveal little bits of ourselves along the way and show who we really are. And who we really are, often we think, is unlovable for many reasons. But the fact remains that who we really are is so valuable and important.
Mm. Here is the wonderful and unusual and often uncelebrated dichotomy of relationships, where opposites really do attract, quite literally. And It's funny how they say when you go through relationships, especially your early relationships, you're learning the sort of part of that you want or that you need. But it's kind of a two-edged sword. I mean, you might be an outgoing partner and you might fall in love with someone who's very introverted and not outgoing at all. And you might think, it's probably not the person for me then. They actually might be the perfect person for you, because the most healthy relationships we see, generally speaking, are the ones where you do have opposite ends of that spectrum. Most long-term relationships that work really well do have a spender and a saver when it comes to money. And they have an outgoing person and an insular person, or an extrovert and an introvert. It's very, very normal and often very successful. But of course, how on earth do you learn to function with that person? Especially when you're in those early days and the blinders are on. And especially the introverted person will be doing a lot for the extroverted person. They're always going out. That's just normal for them. The introverted person is like, oh, I can go out. I can do more. I'm really in love with this person. I'm really loving spending time with them. But after 6 months, they're just exhausted. I can't do it anymore.
Because it's not authentic for them. Person's
like, I thought we were perfect for each other. I thought we were really gelling. But suddenly we're at that, are we compatible? Are we going to meet each other halfway? Or are we just not compatible at all?
Yeah. And is there something in the middle? Is there something that says, I'm not sure if we're compatible, but I would like to find out? And if the other person's in the same place as you, then you've got a really good opportunity to find out, right?
Mm. Yeah. And obviously, when it comes to relationships, there are no right or wrong pairings or right or wrong answers. If your partner is opposite to you in some way, healthy functioning must consist of you compromising. Where if you're the spender and your partner is the saver, then you're going to encourage them to live a little and they're going to encourage you to save a little. And between the two of you, you probably end up very financially stable, but having a great time along the way. There could be such positivity in that compromise. If you can't compromise, if you're just like, no, we must save money for the future, I'm terribly terrified about not having any savings, then it's probably just relationship over before it even starts, right? Yeah.
Because underneath all of that, there are really important needs that each person's going to have. So often I find too, Philip, that compromise can also be misinterpreted as in control. You are trying to control me. You will not control me. I will do it my own way. That makes me a strong person. Whereas really, I think compromise also has the aspect, if we're willing to explore it, compromise can also be about how do we work together so that your important needs are met and my important needs are met, and the ones that we can work on to create a situation where we really do hear each other and we're willing to work with each other. To me, that's really healthy compromise.
Yeah. And communication can be, they always say communication is important to a relationship, but it's really difficult to get that communication just right. And to say, this is what I'm feeling, without saying, I wish you'd stop doing that because I don't like it. Can be, just such a fine art, which if you can be patient with your partner, obviously we'll get better at, or at least I hope we do.
Cross that finger. Okay, so Philip, we're now talking about, the sort of some of the boundaries in relationship. Before I go to the next point, you reminded me of something John Bradshaw once shared, John Bradshaw Sr. He created this incredible series called Bradshaw on the Family, amongst other things. Gosh, was that in the 90s or something? 80s, maybe? And he was saying that, before he met his wife and got married, the apartment was a mess. There were regularly dead cockroaches on the bench where he was eating his cereal. That's fine. Okay, guys, how you doing? I'll clean you up one day. But, once he got married, he found himself yelling at his wife over things like the sugar bowl wasn't full. And it was like, where is all of this coming from? Understanding, he calls them parent tapes. We've got thousands of hours of parent tapes, everything that we've observed our parents do, which is not a blame game, right? Because everybody's learning in their own way. Everybody comes with their parent tapes. So if you find yourself in that situation, that things that you may have been very tolerant of or could put up with, suddenly you can't. It's because it's a natural progression within the scope and sphere of your relationship. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, well put. Yeah, parrot tapes. I like that. That's a far, easier to stomach and enunciate version of all those subconscious influences that have come from your upbringing and your peer group and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So John Bradshaw Sr., John has left the planet. Bless you, John, for everything you gave us and continue to give us. You will find his work all over the place. He's got some of his work on Audible too, which is really exciting. I just bought Bradshaw Homecoming, where he deals with helping us to deal with our shame, because shame is a big part. And shame's actually a part of depression too, isn't it? When we are experiencing depression, we can so often feel ashamed. We are so weak. We are not trying hard enough. Erin Gordon's with us. Finally got to you live instead of on the replay. Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you. Welcome, Erin. So this shame factor can come into, as I say, with depression. What would you say to people, Philip, who may be feeling very depressed themselves or actually suffering depression and they're feeling ashamed and aren't reaching out to others to let them know what's going on because of that shame?
The subconscious often uses tools like shame to keep you depressed. So there's often a reason why you want to be depressed. You've gone through something and it's a bit too traumatic. You don't feel like, or maybe you just don't have the skill set yet to move on independently. And maybe it's been traumatic enough that the ego is so bruised, it just needs time to recover. The subconscious will use tools like shame to say, we're not ready to move out of this cave just yet. Whether you are or are not, and the reality is your subconscious will always be protecting you like that. So it will never stop saying, we're not ready, we're not ready, we're not ready, even though the time's probably long past where it's time to reach out and say, I need some help. It's time to start getting on top of this. But it's important just to remember that things like shame are just a natural part of your body just protecting itself and surviving. It's got to keep your ego stable enough so that you don't go and do something truly terrible to yourself. So just self-protective measures, all part of your normal functioning, serves a purpose, but can't be your master. Otherwise, it will stay that way and it will be a terrible master.
Gosh, that's wonderful. I mean, seeing it in that light, even for me personally, is really opening something in me, which I know that I'm going to be thinking about and exploring long after today's live stream. Philip, thank you. That's powerful stuff.
So, back to relationships, I suppose.
Yeah.
And we're trying to talk about depression and relationships today, aren't we? We've got so much to talk about and so much to share.
But it's all interwoven. Interwoven. It's like trying to say, okay, let's look at a piece of fabric, you know, a lovely cloth. And there's so many threads that actually create that cloth. So to sort of start, you know, tugging a few of those out and having a look at them is a really important way, because there's as many threads as there are in a fabric, as there are people experiencing in their own way, even though they may have, you know, very profound similarities with others.
Mm. Yeah, and often when you're talking about subjects like this in the context of a relationship, you reach just as many people who suddenly see something in their partner and they're like, oh, that's why she or he feels so much shame all the time, is because they're struggling with something quite deep inside and that probably has nothing to do with me. Because, again, when our partner starts to feel depressed or starts to withdraw or starts to feel shame, or maybe they start to lash out because they're hurting, the first person we blame is ourselves, isn't it? When our partner is hurting, we always go, what am I doing wrong? Or what have I done to deserve this? We're just
how do I fix it? How do I fix them?
Naturally very self-focused people, aren't we?
Yeah, which is important, I think, to also embrace and recognize, because from there, that's a springboard for a lot of empowerment to understand that when we really do see the world in terms of how it affects us, that then gives us an insight to other people because they are also seeing the world in that way, right? Mm. And I think a good distinction to bring up here as well is that, you know, relationships encompass all relationships. You know, it could be a friend, a sister, a brother, an aunt, an uncle, a mother. You know, it could be a neighbor who you're close to. What are some of the signs we can look out for within relationships, Philip, that depression may be a factor creating distance?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I had some notes to talk about when we got to the postnatal depression as well, but we might as well just bring it up now. As in, how do you know depression is happening to you or to a loved one? And it's when you say these things out loud, they sound so obvious. Things like, oh, that person suddenly became extra sensitive, or they feel kind of touchy, or they're easily offended, or I feel like I'm walking a bit on tiptoes or on eggshells around them. Generally, that means they're hurting in some way. The person, it can be hard to pick this up, but the person themselves may be feeling very powerless, like they have no ability to influence their world for good or for themselves or to further their own agenda or their own happiness. They may feel easily overwhelmed. You might be saying to your partner, oh, tomorrow we've got to drop the car off at the mechanics, then we've got to get the kids off to school, and then straight away they might be like, just to stop. I just can't right now. Yeah. And probably the biggest one is inability to feel joy, especially with things that the person used to pursue, seek out, or do regularly. They're suddenly retreating from their own favorite things to do. That's a big warning sign.
Yeah. And I think this is a great distinction for us to be making, because it can be so subtle. It can go from, oh, look, I'm too tired to do all of that, or I'm feeling cranky, or it's my time of the month, or things aren't going well at work, or whatever, that we mightn't realise that it's actually progressed beyond that, that it is something deeper, because then we might start getting triggered. Oh, you've never got time. You're always in a cranky mood. All of these little things are all signs and signals that are so subtle sometimes that it's so easy to miss. And it gets to the point where, you know, we drop the butter on the floor or something and it's the end of the world. Yeah. And just think, oh, God, there's such a drama queen, you know. But is it really that, guys? Is it really?
Yeah. And one thing that I learned when I was married, and it seems, again, so obvious now, but until somebody said it to me, it never really occurred to me, is that there's this pattern in relationships when one partner takes a step back, and they might just be like, I'm angry with you or whatever. And your natural response is to also take a step back. And so one takes a step back and everyone goes, oh, blah, 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 I don't feel like I've done anything wrong with them. Well, I'll show you. You do this other thing. And whereas if someone takes a step back, the other partner can just take a step towards them. You know, when somebody told me that clearly, I was like, why don't I do that? What is this need to respond with an accusation, with another accusation?
Yep.
Just that self-protection happening all the time, isn't it, that we're so not really consciously aware of?
Yeah. It's that self-protection, self-preservation, and sometimes it's just our trigger mechanism. We think, well, you know, blow you. That's the way you want to be. So there are all these layers going on all the time, aren't they? Aren't there, Philip? And these layers can be very misleading. So have a think about the relationships in your life and with your own self. Are you noticing those types of things, as Philip just mentioned, not wanting to do the things that you've always loved to do? Maybe you're always too tired. Feeling like you need to go within yourself more and more just to find a bit of relief from your relationships and everything going on in the world. Are you finding that you are angry or getting triggered very easily over things that normally you might think, oh, here we go again, but suddenly you're going, it's the end of the world, and bursting into tears or being angry? withdrawing from society, and it's much easier. Oh, Philip, hey, how's this, right? Because suddenly here we are, we're in lockdown often, so withdrawing from society might actually go unnoticed.
Yes, yes, that's very true. And so many stories of people going, lockdown, I can do this. I'm ready. I'm prepared. I've seen the struggles everyone else has. All of my support structures are set up. I'm ready. And within 3 weeks, they're like, I actually don't know if I can do this. This is so much harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I actually posted I was invited to share on a LinkedIn post a couple of weeks back about some of the unexpected side effects of going into lockdown. And aside from all of the obvious relationship difficulties that come with suddenly being in such a close space with your significant other for such a long time, another one of the things that I think is sort of not discussed or raised a lot is how when you're put into that place where you are locked down and there's so little things you can do, any trauma, any subconscious issues, any bruised ego things, or anything you've got buried that you haven't faced is suddenly going to be brought to the surface, because we're so good at distracting ourselves. We're so good at going, oh, I'll just stay busy and I'll see my friends. I'll feel better. I'll go to work. I'll feel important. Suddenly you take all that away and there's nothing hiding you from facing those dark things that are just buried inside you, waiting to bare their dark little heads.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Erin's sharing in the comments section on the live stream. Yes, the feeling of being overwhelmed by mundane daily routine stuff is my first sign. Comparing myself to others that seem to have their stuff together can trigger negative downward thought patterns.
Yeah, what a great point. Yeah. Something that we probably need to be reminded of regularly, isn't it? That we can't, we can, but it's very destructive to assume these people are doing really well, compare ourselves on our part in the journey and say we're not doing as good as they are, when in reality their journey is theirs and our journey is ours. Just because it's on Facebook, it could all be a bunch of lies anyway. They're probably not half as happy as they're trying to appear to be on social media.
Yeah.
And as I say, again, our journey is our own, so we are where we are and nothing's going to change that.
Absolutely. And the thing of it is, you know, it's so easy to post really beautiful posts, you know, everything's photoshopped, or I don't know, all the apps that you can take photos and things. I mean, I've got a filter on today, right? And that's okay. But it's when we can't be seen as ourselves. And we all know that knock comes at the door. Oh, and it's one we all dread, where you haven't washed your hair because, you know, 2 days ago it should have been washed and it's sticking up. The place is a mess. Didn't get out of your pajamas or whatever. You just look like hell. We've all had that experience, and that's a natural, normal reaction. But when we don't answer the door, or we feel ashamed because we can't answer the door, we hide. Though that's when we've sort of tipped over that edge. And I've done that myself, where I've thought, oh, look, I'll just pretend I'm not home. And it seems so logical at the time. And, you know, it's like someone really that you know who it is. You can see out the window or whatever. You know it's someone that you know who will just be okay with however you are. It's not like a stranger. Oh, you know, maybe someone who you haven't met before. That's really not the ideal first meeting. Those are little nuances. And then what happened with me when I didn't answer, then I got shamed. I started shaming myself. I should have washed my hair. I should have made my bed. I should have. And then the why didn't's. And then the if onlys. And this was a period of time where I was feeling, after Mum and Dad died, and I was feeling very depressed. That is a normal reaction to something massive happening in your life. But if it goes too far, that's when it can tip into something else. There's a difference between feeling depressed and having depression, isn't there, Philip?
Yeah, that's a good point and a good distinction to make. As you say, if you go through something which causes you to feel grief, you have to then process that grief. It doesn't just go away. But yes, again, then you can end up stuck in that place of depression. So yeah, good distinction.
And I think these are important distinctions. They're very subtle, but they are important distinctions. Erin says she's in Melbourne. Lockdown has been an easy excuse not to get out at times and stay in that rut. That's brilliant that you know that, even if you don't know it at the time. See, that's a distinction right there. When you know it and you understand that you're making that choice, that is a much easier thing than when you don't know it, you don't realize you're making the choice, you just know you need to hide or withdraw, right?
And can we take a moment to ask how people are coping in lockdown? Because when we were talking about lockdown on LinkedIn and all these very, very smart and well-educated, well-meaning psychologists and mental health professionals are always saying, oh, routine, routine, routine. Get up at the same time. Have your breakfast at the same time. Do your exercise at the same time. I despise routine. It's the exact wrong way for me to survive lockdown. But I was talking to my mother, who lives in New Zealand, and they're in lockdown right now. And she says, oh, no, actually, I do need routine to survive, because if I don't have routine, I feel like my whole world's coming apart. So I'd love to know how other people respond to that. Do you, because when I'm in lockdown, the few times that I've been in lockdown, because I'm a frontline worker, so I've never had to stop working. Thank you. But when I have locked down, I've been like, ah, well, I might get up whenever I feel like it, and I might have breakfast who knows when. Maybe I'll go out into the backyard, and maybe I'll stay inside and watch TV all day. Fantastic. But it's been so hard for some people to live without that routine. And I'm starting to feel like, is it just me? Am I the only person who just...
You're not. I'm the same. I find routine, while useful in small doses, I actually find it quite claustrophobic. It's my personality, you know. What do I feel like doing now? Oh, I feel like whatever. Okay, I'm going to do that. Doesn't mean that I have to go out or anything. Oh, I feel like, having a cup of tea and watching a bit of telly. I'm going to do that. And I'm really fortunate because I'm in a place in my life where I can do that. Constructing healthy routines. I want to just touch on that. So one of the things, one of my greatest weaknesses in the whole world is having tea and toast out of beautiful china. Cold toast, crunchy toast with butter and marmalade. Oh, I'm just out of this world, right? But the thing is, I want to eat it every single day and it doesn't agree with me and it's not actually very good for me. So I've realized I can create a routine where Thursdays are my tea and toast and lay in bed till I done will want to get out of the day. So this has been great because I found I was eating toast every single day and I'm feeling awful and so bloated. Caroline says, this is such an important topic. Oh, she's got to go. All right, sweetheart, thank you so much for being with us. Here's how we can actually flip routine on its head and create it in a way that it really serves us. Routine doesn't have to just be about, oh, I've got to clean the toilet and I've got to, you know, clean the fridge and I've got to vacuum the floor. Yes, we do need to do those things if we want to have a certain type of environment, right? Okay, we know that. And they're not fun. Oh, I just can't see, you know, how anyone can think it's fun. Some people do, and that's very cool. So it's understanding what a person's routine is. What matters to you as a routine, or what matters to you, Philip, as not having a routine. So within that structure, I think we come to understand, don't we, that we're getting to know each other a little bit more. We're understanding one another. We want to know what works best for you in a relationship. This is so important.
Yeah, and it almost circles back to that different roles and relationships, doesn't it, where one person loves to go out and be social and the other person is a real homebody and is just so happy spending their Sunday curled up on the couch with a book or in front of a couple of movies.
Yep, absolutely.
It's a kind of routine.
And that's right, because, I mean, I remember my mum. My mum would never even sit down to eat lunch. Excuse me. Her greatest thing was always to be seen to be doing something. So she would eat lunch standing at the bench. And so always when I grew up and got
to be doing something, yes.
Exactly. Yes. Right. So then when I got married, I always felt I had to be seen to be doing something when my husband got home in order to say, look, I'm being productive. And it took me a long time to figure out that link and to understand the stress that was causing me. So everyone watching, this is an opportunity now for you to think about your own links. And those little unconscious patterns can drive us to feel resentment for ourselves and others. And that resentment can drive, you know, those flare-ups that are not about what we're flaring up at all, Philip.
In my current relationship, because I was married with my partner for 11 years, and we've been separated for about 6 years now, and I've been with my current partner for a little over a year, I promised myself this time I was going to be completely 100% myself. No falsehoods, and if the person doesn't like me, well, then there's the door, because I can live on my own. I don't need to be with anybody. And at the time, I didn't really see there could be anything wrong with that. But there are always some unexpected conclusions to these decisions, isn't it? And without realizing it, I actually stopped investing in the relationship a little bit, sort of stayed a bit single. And just like, Hyman, how's your day?
And can I just highlight that? Can I just highlight that? Everyone, listen to that. He stayed a bit single. Thank you. Thanks, Philip. I just wanted to really point that out.
And my partner was like, you're not sharing anything about your day. You're not saying where you've gone, what you've been doing. And to be fair with myself, in my last relationship, you know, I had one of those partners who it was kind of all about her anyway. So I'd get home and she'd do her daily dump, which I will tell all the guys, this is part of a healthy functioning relationship. When you get home, give your partner time to dump. She needs to do that. And then you can go and do your own thing. So she'd do her daily dump and I'd go and do my own thing. And I wasn't sharing. I got in this habit of not sharing. And then, of course, that got solidified in my single years. I'm not talking about my life to anybody. I'm a guy. I just come home, I drink my beer, I watch my TV, I go to bed. But then I haven't really learned to do that very well with my new partner. So I'm trying so hard to just say, I'm having a conversation. I could tell my partner about that. I'm just talking to my friends, but she wants to know this stuff. She wants to know what I did during my day. She wants to know my comings and goings. I'm like, I guess that kind of makes sense, but what a journey for me to learn how to embrace that side of her, what respect that side of her, because not doing that she felt was really closing her out.
And there's a difference. Sorry.
No, I'm here. For you.
And it's such a big difference between, okay, so I don't need anyone in my life. So if you don't like it, go to, I don't need anyone in my life, I really want to have you in my life. I'd like to have you in my life if we can be in a healthy, respectful way with each other. That's a big difference. Because when we say, well, I don't need anyone in my life, off you go, that's really when we can't create intimacy in a relationship where we're distanced, we detach. And when we detach like that, we actually, it's basically giving the relationship the bird, you know, don't like it, go. It's
so easy to remain closed off when you're the burned person as well from your previous relationship. We're just like, no, this feels quite good. I feel quite safe being closed off. But staying closed off, honestly, you can't be connected to anybody either.
That's
not genuinely.
You need that if we want to have intimacy. So Aaron says, I need spontaneity that sparks joy for me, and lockdown has prevented those moments. Okay, so let's talk about how these situations like lockdown, so someone's already in depression, suddenly their partner, they've got a lot more time with each other, right? So their relationship may start to break down. How do we know when it's time as a partner or a friend or a daughter or a son, how do we know, Philip, when it's time to actually reach out and receive assistance instead of waiting for the other person to do that?
Oh, well, I would say don't wait, because chances are, even if you're feeling okay about something, but you just go, oh, I'll just talk about stuff anyway, the person you're talking to probably needs you to talk about them to everybody who's really, really struggling. Yeah. So if you, even if you're going, gee, I think I'm doing okay, but boy, I'd like some more spontaneity in my day, the person you're talking that to will be like, oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I'm going out of my mind. I'm missing my routine. I'm missing being able to go outside and be spontaneous. Yeah, everybody is needing that communication right now.
Yeah. And so often I find too that, and it's certainly been my own experience, where the person will absolutely insist that they are fine and that they do not want you putting your nose in where it doesn't belong. That's a very difficult situation, because you don't want to cause waves, but you don't want to reach out, but you know you need to reach out. So what would be a way forward for someone who might be in that situation, Philip? What kind of things could they do?
Well, tell you, it's an easy thing for guys, for other guys. So I might need your help with this one there when it comes to girls. Because for guys, when guys don't want to talk, we're actually really good at just bonding over a shared experience. So guys can just, we could watch a movie, but we could be in different houses. And we could just be messaging each other during that movie and feel a sense of connection. We could jump into an online game. We could actually play a game together or against each other. Any shared experience at all, and a guy will start to feel a sense of bonding with other people. So we kind of get to cheat our way around it a little bit. Right, we're not talking about that thing we're actually suffering, but we feel better, so we're surviving.
Yeah.
With women, yeah. It must be so much harder, because I know that you ladies don't process your stuff until you're talking it out. So
true.
You tell me, Anna, would that mean just patiently saying, are you sure? Or maybe starting to share your own issues and say, well, here's where I'm feeling vulnerable, if you've got time for me. Or just walking away and saying, look, if you're not ready to talk about it, that's fine, but anytime you pick up the phone, know that I am there.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there for me. One of the things I've learned to do is, if the person flat out says, no, leave me alone, I make sure I maintain contact, right? There's a real pitfall that we can trip into by sending text messages and not having voice contact. We can fake anything in a text message. We got all these cute emojis, right? Voice calls are so important, even if the other person doesn't pick up. Leave a message. Hey, just thinking about you. I want you to know I'm sending you love. Simple.
Another really
important thing, and this is so important for teenagers, as you will well know, there's a way of having a conversation that takes a lot of the immediate stress out of it, and that is no eye-to-eye contact, side by side. So if you're in a car, this is ideal. Or, you know, if you're sitting on a couch or whatever, it's not about necessarily turning and looking at the person. You might be watching telly. Just start talking that way. Don't look at the person. It takes that immediate pressure off, where they don't have to respond. You're not reading their emotions as they're written all over their face. Gazing into their eyes can feel very confronting and terrifying, because, hey, you might be working super hard to keep it all hidden. So making sure
it makes sense why taking someone for a walk is such a great way to get them talking. Hey, again,
absolutely. Like, yeah. So important. Another really great thing to do is something really simple, like what's your shared passion? So, you know, say if you love to read, I adore reading, you know, talk about a book. Oh, have you read this book? And if they have, you've got a point of contact. If they haven't, you can say, I've just finished it. It's great. I've got a copy. Would you like me to lend it to you? You're opening a doorway for a conversation to flow. If they say yes, then every time they pick up that book, that's a connection with you, right? if they say no, you've still opened the door for a conversation. If they say no, you say, well, are you reading anything good at the moment or last week? Which is kind of tricky, Philip, because if you're depressed, sometimes you can't remember what words you just read 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, you tend to focus on tasks that don't involve any mental power at all. Hey, so you'll spend 3 hours flicking through posts on Facebook, or you watch a television program and all you remember is the commercials.
So if it's music, for example, send them a clip of something. There's all these little ways of maintaining contact, but again, one of the most important things is make sure you maintain voice contact.
I like it.
That's really important. And it's so easy to fall into text messaging all the time. And I think we've come into a point where we feel like we might be bothering the person if we call, so we just shoot off a text or a messenger message or something. That's dangerous. That's creating a lot of room for us to isolate ourselves from each other as well. We might not even realize it's happening.
And I know a lot of people, especially of my generation, like the 35 to 45s, we just out of the habit of talking on the phone. And so a lot of my friends will see the phone ringing and they'll be like, oh no, if you want to talk to me, send me a message, or we'll catch up in person. And really, I think it's gotten a little bit, I don't know, have we gotten a bit lazy? Have we gotten a bit self-indulgent? Where it's just like, I don't feel like talking on the phone to that person. That's probably really good for us.
Yeah, so leave a voice message if you can. If they have voicemail, leave a message. Hey, just call them to say hello.
Which is that we might, or even the person we're calling might need some time to emotionally prepare to have that conversation.
That's a great point. I remember my mum, if I said to mum, hey, what are you doing right now? Do you want to go and have a cup of coffee? That was like, oh, panic stations. Because you and I could go, yeah, let's go, do it. Mum would need warning. How about we go and have a cup of coffee on Tuesday, mum? Oh, yeah, okay. And then that was her nature. That's just the way she was. So understanding that people have different ways of, as you just said, responding to a spontaneous conversation or invitation is very important. Doesn't mean you don't continue. You offer an option. Hey, have you got time? Let's catch up. Got time to talk for 5 minutes on Tuesday?
Yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm. Erin says, welcome to everyone watching, by the way. So great having your company. Erin says, I feel I have less time with my husband during lockdown. He is a frontline worker and works long days, 6 days a week. Whilst I'm home with the kids, that's a big one, that type of isolation. And it's an underestimated type of, because you're in your home, you've got your comfort, you've got the internet, you've got the telly, you've got the kids, right? But you're still feeling isolated.
Still missing one of the most important things in your life, which is your relationship with your significant other. It's always going to be challenging for sure.
And you're still doing for everybody else. You're doing the dishes, you're cooking, you're looking after the kids, you're being there when your partner gets home. There's often, Erin, what do you think about this? There's often you can get overlooked so easily.
And we overlook ourselves as well. We get so caught up in what we need to do. It's hard, it must be so hard, especially when you've got kids at home, to make time for your own self-care. Can't imagine how difficult that would be to balance.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking about all these different aspects of relationship breakdown. One of the things I want to point out about postnatal depression, and it's quite similar to what we've said about other types of depression, but the woman may not even know she has postnatal depression. People say, well, how can you not know? I didn't know. it wasn't until my daughter was about 9 months old that my stepmother said, "Anaya, you're depressed." "What do you mean?" "This is what I can see." I was like, "Oh my God, I actually am." I didn't know. I was crying all the time, which as a mum with a young child, you don't get a lot of sleep sometimes, if they're, and especially when they're teething. And Erin was very, sorry, Erin, I'm outing you in public here. Erin was very demanding. She wanted to be with me all the time. And I, in retrospect, I understand now that because I was feeling so out of balance as a child, she was picking that up. And so she, her whole life was out of balance. So she clung to me even more because she was looking for a safety net, because her mum, who was all her safety, dad's at work, all the rest of it. Once that's not balanced, the kids will react like that.
So, and what did you think was going on? Or did you think that just being super emotional and super tired and struggling, did you just expect that that was kind of the natural part of being a young mother?
I just thought it meant I was a failure as a mother.
Oh, wow.
I was not doing it good enough. No, look at my friends. They've got their hair done, the house is done. You know, they seem to have happy kids. Obviously, it's me. I'm bad at this.
And so you were just tearing strips off yourself internally without realizing that it was leading to a dark place or keeping you in a dark place.
Yep. And it wasn't until my stepmother pointed it out in a loving but very firm way. You know, things like, I remember this one incident. I was very particular about what I fed my children. And so, but there was a time where, like, if we were out, I'd get a jar of baby food, and she'd have that if we were out and it was not easy or possible. Well, she really loved it, the little blighter. And she wouldn't eat anything unless it came out of that jar. So I used to cook all her veggies and everything, and hide them in these jars. And then she'd eat it. And she just said to me, "Darling, the child will not starve if she doesn't eat. When she's hungry, she will eat."
Yeah, wow.
And I looked at her and I thought, I think she might be right. So she wouldn't eat it. Okay, fine. It didn't take her very long before she said, because she's 9 months old at this stage. She's not she's not like a newborn. It's little things like that, Philip. "Darling, she will not starve." Her self-preservation will kick in.
Were there other support structures or particular techniques which were really, really useful to you to get you out of that place?
Just having that one person see me made all the difference. She said, "Darling, go and talk to your doctor." "Darling, talk to your doctor. I'm going to check in and find out when your appointment is." And I went and spoke to my doctor, and which was really difficult to do, but he assured me that it wasn't that I was, you know, not being a good mother. And I didn't have medication or anything. Some people do. I personally didn't have to have that at that stage. Later on, I did go on antidepressants for a time in my life when things got very, very difficult and very dark for me. And that was another journey in itself, accepting that I needed that at that time, or it felt like the right choice. And for me, it turned out to be a great choice. It was a short-term choice. But having that one person recognize me and going to the doctor and saying, "This is what I'm feeling," and having him identify, "You have postnatal depression. Here are some strategies for you." It took me out of a dark room to realize it won't matter how hard I try, because I'm not a bad mother, and trying not to be a bad mother was making me feel like an even worse mother. There's any mums and dads, because they've got a lot of stay-at-home dads and a lot of dads with children without a mum, you know, who's feeling this way? It's very easy to get caught up in it. We need outside help sometimes. Sometimes it's just that person to identify what's going on. And then I started to read information about it and gain support that way. Made a big difference, fella. I was really going down the plug hole and my relationship was just terrible, which didn't make it any better. So I understand about relationship breakup through NDE. NDE, God. PND, postnatal depression, PND, sorry. Not near-death experience. Although it can feel a bit like that because your whole life feels like it might be ending. But it's the dream of the life, not the dream. Sometimes you can't live that dream. It was never real to begin with. You know what I mean?
If you could imagine a perfect partner to help you through that time, what specific things could that partner have done for you?
Simply asking, are you okay? Simply saying, you're doing a great job. Simply saying, sit down, put your feet up, I'm taking the baby, I'll bath the baby, whatever it is. Having a meal provided. It's those little things that create the tipping point where suddenly it's this endless round of feeding other people. That
you must have felt really alone in the journey with all the expectations.
Absolutely, and I didn't know how to ask for any of those things for myself in those days. Of course, I was very young. Erin says, I'm always feeling I'm not good enough as a mother. However, I do realise I am my own worst critic. That's a great realisation to have, but it still doesn't help us at that time, does it? You know?
Once the depression has set in, it can be difficult to think yourself out of it by giving it permission to be in that position, yeah.
So, Erin, I'd be interested to know from you what would help you in those situations when you've got those feelings. I think one of the most important things I could say to anyone listening, if you have a partner who is experiencing this, do the little things, the big gestures. While they are wonderful in the moment, they don't last. The little things do. Get a load of washing done and then get it off the line or out of the dryer and fold and put away. That means a lot.
Yeah, it's a great reminder for all of our guys out there in the team that those little things regularly done genuinely as well, not begrudgingly, suppose I'll get the washing in. No, actually sit your partner down and say, have I told you today you are beautiful, astoundingly, dramatically beautiful to me? Can I make you a cup of tea?
Yep.
So small and yet so significant.
Exactly. I'm cooking dinner. So three of the most romantic words in the world.
Very good.
You know, this is what we have Chrissy with us, and she shares, I was pregnant and alone, and that was one of the hardest times of her life, but she did survive. We're powerful and strong individuals, even though we don't know. I bet, Chrissy, you didn't know that at the time, but here you are sharing that with us now.
Must have been so difficult, and yet now that you've been through it and realised your strength, surely it must be a lot easier for you now to see something coming up, challenging, going, oh, boy, if I did that, I could do anything.
Yeah.
So good for you.
Good for you, Chrissy, and congratulations. And I want to acknowledge, too, that not all couples, we have, you know, same-sex couples as well. It's really important to understand that not all women want to be mothers. And not all fathers want to be fathers, but they do want to create a family. So how do we help people who, and when I say they don't want to be fathers, it's not that they don't want children, but they don't know how to give as a father figure or how as a mother figure. So how do we support you now going forward, so that, you know, so many expectations and judgments on us anyway, and you guys are going to have judgments that I don't face. So what are some of the things, if you could share on our page, that have actually supported you, especially in the comments section on this live stream, that might help other people to know what made a difference for you? This is a community. We really value anything that you can share with us and everyone here and who will come later.
Now, one other thing I'd like us to cover before we move on from our relationships and our depression topic is in relationship therapy, there is something that happens quite often where a couple, traditionally a man and a woman, but it doesn't have to be, they'll be doing really, really well. Everything's going fine. Maybe a year or so into the relationship, maybe a little more, and suddenly depression can hit, generally speaking, the female. And it can really come out of nowhere, and it can be surprising for both partners because he'll think he's doing a great job and she'll think everything's going fine, and suddenly there's all these depression and there's anxieties coming. But there's this can be very, very healthy functioning. So what can be happening is, for the first time in this person's life, they're finally feeling safe. And this then allows the subconscious to go, cool, all of that trauma from your childhood that we buried, you're now safe enough and protected enough to process. And here it comes. There you go. Yeah. That can feel quite unnatural. I'm so happy. I'm so safe. Why am I suddenly feeling so depressed and traumatized? It's because you're feeling happy and safe. Mm-hmm. Suddenly your body is going, it's time to process that trauma. It's time to let some stuff go.
That's a really good point.
Always say to the guys who are going, oh, I always say to the guys, your time will come.
Yes.
She's processed her stuff. Suddenly all your stuff will come out.
And we all have stuff.
We've all got stuff.
You know, and usually plenty of it. And that kind of feels like the worst thing in the world, but it's actually the best thing in the world, because that's how we get to the core of who we truly are. Because pretending that we're somebody else is exhausting, isn't it? I was exhausted for a lot of my life.
And there is such joy and such freedom in being free of these things and just being able to finally embrace ourselves as a individual selves, and ourselves free of all of the stuff that is just not ours, but it gets picked up along the way, and we spend all these years trying to cope with it and trying to understand it and trying to bury it. Yeah, it's very, very liberating to be free of all that stuff and go, yeah, I can just be me. Kind of okay.
Absolutely. And I learned along the way that if a person trusts you enough to show their true selves, it's not that they're dumping on you. It's just like you said, Philip, finally they're acknowledging that they're safe. And it's how you go forward with that. You know, there are a lot of Beyond Blue is one here in Australia. There are a lot of organizations. And here's the trick: when you're feeling really depressed, you haven't got the wherewithal or the energy to find anywhere. Yet when someone says, is there anything I can do to help you? Sometimes the best thing you can say to that is, yes, I don't know what it is, but yes. And eventually together, you know, you might be able to say to that person, can you find someone I can talk to? Can you find a support group? Can you find whatever?
Speaking of,
a powerful word.
One of the mothers I was talking to about postnatal depression during the week recommended something called Peanut, which is an app here in Australia. I don't know if it exists in the States, but Peanut is like Tinder for mums who just want to make friends. And she said it was remarkably good. There's all these mums who are struggling and alone. They just want to get together with someone and just share the journey. So very, very powerful. So good one to look up if you're looking for one.
Fantastic. Thank you, Philip. I know my daughter is, one of my daughters has a couple of private mums groups on Facebook. That has been awesome. She's been able to gain lots of information or ask for advice or whatever. Those sorts of things, make sure they're private groups, everyone. And if anybody approaches you to ask for anything from you, no matter how small it is, just block them. Do it.
Stay safe.
Stay safe, because the people you want, if they're asking anything of you, it's how are you? They're not asking of you, they're asking about you. Just be aware. But there's a lot of, and call in lots of universal support. Now, this is something that can't be underestimated either. So Peanut in Australia, and if someone asked you, is there anything I can do for you? Say yes. Okay, what can I do? I don't know. Can I leave that with you? All I know is I feel this way. And then that's it. You don't have to do anything. It's up to them. Then if they want to go ahead and find somewhere for you, if it was me, I'd be thinking, right, okay, then I'd be on Google searching, you know, my friend is depressed, how can I help, or something like that. These are just little things, but wow, so important. And I just want to acknowledge, Erin says her husband is wonderful in that he will do the dishes or a load of washing even though he has been working very, very long days because he's a frontline worker. This is a good one before we go. These gestures tend to feed my guilt. Philip, her husband's helping her and she feels guilty because he's working so hard. That's a really good point.
Isn't that incredible? And what a great thing to acknowledge as well, is that you've got a great guy who works hard and still has the energy to do something for you at the end of that day to try and share your burden. Good on you for being brave enough to admit that sometimes that makes me feel guilty, because there must be some expectation on you that I should be able to do everything. Mm-hmm. But the reality is none of us can we? And we are supposed to lean on each other. And wow, he just sounds like a great, let me just celebrate that partner of yours. What a true gentleman. And I'm so glad to hear that they are still out there. Good on him. Good on you both. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's, you know, again, don't fall into the fairy tale about somebody else always having everything perfect. You know, they've got their gym clothes on, you know, they're laundered, whatever they're called, laundered somebody or other. The false eyelashes, and they always look amazing, because, you know, that look, hey, we don't know another person's story, and it's not up to us to say, well, that is who they are, right?
In my experience, the harder somebody works to try and look like they have it together, the less they have it together.
Yeah. And that's not to say that if you're wearing those clothes that you don't have it together. That's not what we're saying. But it is about, let's look a bit deeper than what we're presenting to the world for ourselves and for others. You know, I presented a really amazing picture to the world for a long time, and I was just crumbling inside and got to the point where I really thought my whole family would be better off and happier if I wasn't here anymore. This is huge. And that's when I got really scared and went and spoke to somebody. Please don't wait till you get to there, because suicide is a big thing, and it can hinge on a few seconds, literally. So it's about supporting each other. Are you okay? Make those phone calls. Stay in touch. Drop dinner over. You can see someone's really struggling. Drop them some dinner over. It's incredible the amount of people you'll say, right, you know, how can I help? Give us a basket of washing, I'll do your washing. Oh, no, 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 no. And you understand that. You probably don't want anybody doing your washing either. But if they're a really good friend, think about the burden, especially if you're a single parent. We need to be supporting each other, guys. It's really super important. You are super important. And oh gosh, Philip, I'm so grateful for the support you get to give people once a month as, you know, as we present these programs together.
I'm very fortunate to be able to be so blessed in giving so much, because the blessing always goes to the giver. So thank you for the opportunity to be a blessing.
Absolutely perfect. Thank you, Philip. And Philip, you will find Philip on Rogue Therapies on Facebook, roguetherapies.com. Philip is in Australia, but he works all around the world, and he works with a lot of different people on a lot of different levels. So, and I know Philip is very open to send him a message. Shoot him off a message at Rogue Therapies on Messenger. He's very happy to receive those, aren't you, Philip?
Absolutely. Yes.
It's not about, you know, having to go any further. It's about just sending a message of, hey, I'm struggling today. That's all you got to do. Okay, everyone. Now, it has been a great pleasure and a great privilege to be with you. Philip is with me at this time every month. So it's the third week of the month, Monday in the USA and Canada timeline, which is Tuesday in Australia, New Zealand and UK timeline. So do check out our Facebook page, like us, follow us. There's a lot that we have for you there, a lot that we bring to the table. And I've disappeared again. Oh, my God, it freaks me out. I looked out to, oh, my God, I'm bodiless.
It's interesting for us all.
So, you know, and hey, the reason that, you know, I'm suggesting that you get on board with our page, it just makes it a lot easier for us to share with you and give to you, provide support to you and acknowledge you if you want to be acknowledged. If you don't want to be acknowledged, then we won't. Being together is enough. So thank you again, Philip.
Thank you,
Anna. roguetherapies.com, Rogue Therapies on Facebook, and remember to be kind to you. This is what it's all about. We want kindness from others, don't we? But unless and until we learn how to be kind to ourselves, it's very difficult to receive kindness from others, right? So the kinder you are to yourself, the more you will find kindness will come to you, and that's a fact. Okay, everyone, see you again soon. I'm also on Thursdays in the USA, Fridays in Australia as well. So do check us out then. And we look forward to catching up with you again soon. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. Look after you and be kind to you. Lots of love. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another fabulous program on Angel Heart Radio. Our goal is to remind you of how much you matter in the world, and to let you know that we appreciate who you are in the world. Angel Heart Radio programs are powerful tools. They are not intended, nor should they, be used to replace your medical or legal advice. The views and opinions expressed by Angel Heart Radio hosts, guests, co-hosts and associates should not be construed as advice from Angel Heart Radio.